This is the Warrior Mind Podcast, and I'm your host, Greg Swanson, podcasting from gorgeous Mile High, Colorado Springs. The Warrior Mind Podcast is a personal empowerment series that provides you the information required to develop a mindset of a warrior, maximize your human potential, and achieve peak performance. The Warrior Mind Podcast is produced every week for your enjoyment, and show notes and links can be found at warriormindcoach.com. Use the pull-down menu and look for the blog. Come back often and feel free to add the podcast to your RSS feed or iTunes, and please share this with your friends, neighbors, and relatives. If this is your first time listening, thank you for coming. If you're returning, thank you for your continued support. This is episode 474, and today's kind of a spontaneous podcast. I've been working with a gentleman, Doug Staharczyk, out of the UK, who is the CEO of AQR, that has developed a mental toughness MTQ 48 plus, a 48 question to not necessarily develop mental toughness, but to test an assessment for your mental toughness. And I use this assessment with my clients, with my athletes. And I had a spontaneous call with Doug to schedule an interview, and this particular call turned into a really great 20-minute conversation about the state of mental toughness and mental strength. So we recorded it, and I'm going to play it back. So it's kind of raw. It's not the formal interview that you would normally be used to on this podcast or other podcasts. You may think of it as overhearing a conversation between two individuals that are definitely inspired and inspired by mental strength and mental toughness. So sit back, relax, enjoy this conversation, and this is going to lead to a more formal interview, which I will post later on.
Oh. Hello, Greg. How are you?
Wonderful. Yourself?
Thank you as well. Very well. Thank you.
Hi, Greg. How are you?
Doug, how are you doing? The world traveler that you are.
Worn out.
It looks like things are going very, very well.
They are. I mean, globally, the concept has taken off and people have begun to understand it. Mm-hmm. Begun to understand the difference between mental toughness and resilience. Okay. And we're getting very, very good traction and now beginning to convert it into some good business.
And awesome.
You know, we're getting some massive clients on board as well.
So what's your sweet spot right now? Is it education, business, military, sports?
No, it's business. The big issues there are, I mean, they don't talk about it so much, but it is performance. But the two big issues underpinning that are well-being and agility, being able to deal with change. Change. We are getting a lot more traction in sport. We're getting a lot of traction in higher education. Mm-hmm. And there's a whole pile of stuff there. It's about universities and colleges preparing people properly for the world of work.
Right.
That's a big issue.
Fantastic. So with businesses, are you working with the executive levels for them or the worker bees? And what size business is your sweet spot? Is it a 10 million, 50 million?
Oh, it is the big businesses. So for instance, the clients that we are literally working with this week is Deloitte's, which is probably, it's one of the big four accountancy firms.
Oh, okay.
And I've just had a call this morning. Accenture want to meet with us. Mm-hmm. So we've got a meeting coming up with Google. So all of those, and it's right at the top. All of the interest is from the top, but it's predominantly about culture development. Trying to create a more positive, more can-do culture, but a culture that is also employee engagement, I think, is a worn-out phrase. It's getting, right. You know, in those big organizations, change impacts the people further down the organization. And it's,
right. So how do you position, and if I'm getting off topic, please. One of the things that I found when I was doing sales training is that many companies wanted a sales trainer to come in, give them the right tools, give them right. We'd give it to them, and then there'd be no support from management. There'd be no coaching from management. There'd be nobody on board to help institute or implement the training that took place. So with mental toughness coming in, you do the assessments. There's some toolkits and stuff. How is management positioning themselves internally to continue this as opposed to using it as a checklist? Yep, we did mental toughness. Yep, we did this.
Well, you have described exactly the approach that people are picking up on. It's about supporting it with coaching and mentoring as well. Mentoring tends to get forgotten. It's still a valuable skill. So a lot of the work we do starts top down and introduces coaching skills to support the development of a different mindset.
Okay.
Now, we can't change somebody's mindset in 2 or 3 days. We can make people self-aware. We can make people reflect on the implications of what they know. But actually making that change has to be supported top down.
Right. And then once that gets supported, because most of the times it's, you know, that fixed mindset. Well, it's not me. It's them that needs it. I'm okay. Yeah. It's somebody else. But then to get them to convince it. But then once you leave, meaning AQR leaves, what, to the best of your knowledge, what's put in place to support this month after month, year, because they need internal coaches. I mean, the managers don't have time to manage this.
No, that's correct. So one of the things that we've developed in the last 18 months is a relationship with the European Mentoring and Coaching Council. Mm-hmm. I don't know how familiar you are with EMCC. Well, they are now globally recognized as the gold standard. So they've really taken over in a lot of territories from ICF. ICF you'd be very familiar with.
Right.
ICF tends to focus on coaching and tends to focus on life coaching. Mm-hmm. You go to their meetings, they're all life coaches. Mm-hmm. EMCC was set up by David Clutterbuck, who's quite a, you know, bit of a guru, and he focuses on performance coaching. Mm-hmm. So there's a bigger appeal in organizations. So what we do is we introduce EMCC accredited programs into organizations, quite often at the top, but quite very often at the middle level, especially to aspirational managers and leaders.
Mm-hmm.
So we actually started with that. Our Deloitte project, the first thing we did, train 20 coaches before we did anything.
Right, okay.
You know, make sure that the infrastructure's there to be able to support things.
Okay.
And what we find in a lot of cases is they will then go and buy our time to go in and, you know, every 2 or 3 months and do a stock check.
Right, right. Is that something similar to a train the trainer type, quote unquote, train the trainer, where you come in, work with people inside the company, whether it's Google or whatever, get them up to speed, and then they take over internally to develop?
Exactly. Okay. Yeah, and that's an important aspect of philosophy, because, you know, I've been in this game for a long time. We have many times run team building programs. The minute we walk out, the whole thing collapses.
Mm-hmm.
So the trick is, if we're talking about culture change, how do you change the culture? Well, we can impact on the culture, but they have to change the culture.
Right, right. And that's been my challenge, either working with big companies or being an employee of AT&T and Lucent and others, is that it's almost like, what's the hot topic of the year?
Yeah,
let's
roll
through it. And then next year, nothing happens. There's no sustainability behind it. And
well, you hit the nail on the head. It's my bete noire. What we found, well, again, my experience is most organizations tend to be faddists. They pick up the latest fad. They go to a presentation or a conference somewhere. Somebody talks about mindfulness. Everybody's doing mindfulness.
Right.
Regardless of the fact that there isn't a single shred of evidence for mindfulness.
Right.
You know, there isn't.
Right. Well, I guess what's interesting, so have you read the book Stealing Fire?
No.
Oh, awesome book. Awesome book. Hey. It's about ecstatic states and different ways to get to ecstatic states. But part of it was talking about Martin Seligman, right? Talking about positive psychology, but then changing the word meditation to mindfulness because it was more acceptable in corporations than meditation was. So his philosophy is that, okay, we're going to change the word meditation to mindfulness and market it, not him, but there'd be more around it. So the mindfulness part is actually meditation, but it's flavored for it to be more palatable for corporate.
And there's, we're not saying that meditation or mindfulness doesn't work. It's just that people have grabbed hold of a fad and they're using it without knowing whether it works.
Right. Or how it works. And they're only using it as one leg of a four-legged table.
Yeah.
Right. Because with the four C's, right, mindfulness, I put that into goal setting, mental rehearsal, all of that, you know, whatever you visualize as a goal setting. And that's one of the, you know, the four legs. And so they're expecting a table to stand on one leg and it just doesn't work.
Exactly. And there's a guy, I can't pronounce his name. It's a Russian name. He has developed this concept of flow, which is what you were describing before.
Mihai Csikszentmihalyi.
That's the guy. Now, he is only moderately well known. But if you look at what he was talking about, other people have pinched his ideas and turned them into something else. So this idea of getting into a state of ecstasy or into the zone, that's his idea.
Right. And what's interesting, though, is everybody, not everybody, I guess it depends on the circles we run with.
Yeah.
Because in the circles I run with, he's very popular. He's like well known for the past 15, 20 years.
Yeah.
And then Steve Kotler wrote a book called The Rise of Superman, who talked about Mihai Csikszentmihalyi flow. And Steve Kotler was the co-author of Stealing Fire.
Yeah. I can see that
connection. Stealing Fire is about getting ecstatic states to get into flow for peak performance. And there's a lot of things that mental toughness is underpinning that concept.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, there's a couple of people now making a name for themselves. There's a guy in the States called Adam Grant. I'm sure you've come across him.
No.
And I'm just trying to remember, there's a guy in the UK who are very highly respected academics, and they're tearing holes in a lot of concepts that people use. I mean, they've torn MBTI to shreds, and that's creating opportunities for us, because what people are saying, I've been using MBTI for 20 years, it's very popular, it's very easy to understand, but if it doesn't work, I need to find something that does work. And our strength is the volume of research. There are now more than 90 research papers, academic research papers, that support our work. And we're not academics.
Right.
For us, to be able to put our hands up and say, this is rock solid science, it's tested to death, you can use it with confidence. That's important. And I think that's the future. People are just becoming more and more savvy. They will still be gullible and they'll still buy the latest fad. But when we work with Deloitte wanted to know the evidence. Our proposal was a business case. It wasn't a proposal to run a training program.
Right.
And we're beginning to see that a lot more.
Wow, that makes... I think it was the Happiness Advantage.
Yes.
Talked about outlined errors, and when they went home, they would find all the errors in their significant others and their family, and they weren't able to switch out of this mode. So I find it interesting that a big accounting firm wants to, you know, take on the mental toughness concept.
Yeah, well, that issue is well-being, because accountants, especially in an organization like Deloitte's, see themselves as experts, so they're on a pedestal. Right. But actually, the clients don't treat them like that. The clients say, I'm about to run a takeover program.
Yep, sure.
Excuse me, I won't be a second. Hi, I'm on another line. Okay, fine. See you. Done. It's my wife.
Oh, wait a second. You should have stayed on there. You could be in trouble now when you leave.
Yeah, it's fine.
Well, it sounds like things are really, really doing very well for you.
It's a challenging journey because we find we've got to become a little bit controversial and provocative. Mm-hmm. But it's working. Is working. So you mentioned Seligman. Seligman is beginning to take a bit of a hammering from the academic community, mm-hmm. as is Dweck. And Dweck, I don't know whether you're familiar.
Right, about, mindset.
Well, the idea of fixed and growth mindset, it's an appealing idea. It's not operational. You can't do anything with it. Mm-hmm. You know, it's such a high-level concept. And
I think just in defense of that, what I picked up out of it, you know, for that in that particular thing, first, I think all of these have slivers of truth. They have working stuff. It's when we bow down to it as the new God, when it gets pragmatic. But anyway, what I appreciate about Carol Dweck's part was that she emphasized the effort as opposed to the result.
And
in mental toughness, athletes focus on winning the race, they usually don't win the race. They have to focus on what did they do to win the race.
Yeah. Well, I completely agree with you.
Right.
We will always talk positively about Carol Dweck, that she brought an idea to the forefront of people's minds. Mm-hmm. But even she has now admitted she got the spectrum wrong.
Right.
So, but you're absolutely right about athletes. The biggest development for us is, I think when we last spoke, we had the MTQ 48. Mm-hmm. We now have MTQ Plus. And the breakthrough really is not just understanding commitment better, but understanding challenge. And mm-hmm. what we know about challenge now is that it's got two factors. One is risk orientation. That's the extent to which I'm prepared to try new things. Mm-hmm. If you think about an athlete or a football player, they keep with the same techniques they learned 5 years ago, they're never going to go and improve themselves.
Right.
And then the other element is you can push yourself, you can try new things. It'll very often go wrong. Learning orientation. And that's the big breakthrough in understanding mental toughness. Whether we learn from our mistakes or learn from our experiences is a big determining factor.
Right. So can I ask a question on that? Because within NLP, we talk about that there's no failure, there's just feedback.
Yeah, yeah.
And that everything we need to see is a learning. But in NLP, they define a learning as something that moves you forward. For instance, if you're dating a certain type of person, the learning is not, I'll never date that person again. Right. That's right. So a learning is at least, and I just wanted to get your clarification on that. A learning, what I have been schooled on with NLP, is something that you don't do, but something that you're going to do differently.
Absolutely. So when I describe it, it actually came from some work we were doing with senior executives. And what I noticed was they were typical senior executives that would try new things. Mm-hmm. But when something went wrong or their plan wasn't rolling out the way expected, mm-hmm. you'd get, I'm polarizing, one of two reactions. Some would say, that isn't working, right. I'm never doing that again. Others would say, that isn't working, it's uncomfortable. But actually, I'm learning from that and I think I now know how to do it better. So what we saw is some people were learning from experiences, other people were not learning from their experiences. And that's really about, I mean, it ties back to self-actualization. Right. You know, what was Maslow talking about? Mm-hmm. There's a 70-year-old that was poo-pooed for a long time.
And it's now being poo-pooed again by certain.
Oh, I know. Seligman doesn't like it.
Right. Yeah. So it's all these people who are positioning for acknowledgement, right? Just get the egos out of the way.
Exactly. And as you said before, there are glimmers of truth in all of these concepts. And I think what we've tended to do is pull together these nuggets. We've created a framework that seems to be solid. And it you can recognize Dweck's ideas or Seligman's ideas in what we're offering. You can recognize Maslow's ideas.
Right. And then also Duckworth, with resilience.
Yes, yes.
Right. So her idea is grit. Hers was grit.
Yes.
Right. Grit is passion and perseverance towards a worthwhile goal. And that's all that's included in mental toughness. Doug, let me ask you a question, if I can, when it comes to executives. When you're working with an executive and bringing them on board with mental toughness and they just resist, you know that they need to change. Because it's going to a certain way, it's producing this result, they can count on it. And if they change their mindset to be more mentally tough, taking risks, et cetera, they may be putting their bonus at risk. How do you walk them through that?
Right. Okay. Well, I mean, if we start off with, if they're closed to any support you're going to give them, you're going to struggle to shift it. But what we find is if we start off, they like the notion of mental toughness. So you let them complete the mental toughness questionnaire. And yes, it shows them that they're mentally tough. And what you can do is say, okay, this is where your advantage comes from. So mental toughness brings advantages to a lot of people. Mm-hmm. What we also know is there are potential disadvantages of being mentally tough. And all those potential disadvantages are about how you engage with the world around you. Mm-hmm. So a mentally tough individual doesn't need other people. They can do everything on their own. But the trouble is, when you get to a senior level in an organization, you're no longer on your own. You're having to operate through other people. But if you've got a very high sense of control, you can be a control freak. If you've got a high sense of emotional control, people can't read you. They don't understand what's going on. If you've got a high level of goal orientation, sometimes you set too many goals and too hard goals for the people around you, not just for you. If you've got too high level of achievement orientation, you push people too hard because... yeah, I can work 16 hours a day, but maybe they can't.
Right.
Okay. And then it's the same with risk orientation. I take too many risks, learning orientation. And one of the biggest ones is interpersonal confidence. Interpersonal confidence is one of the things that usually gets people to the top because they can talk a great job. However, they can also end up being verbal bullies. They will not listen. And so what we do is we say, right, this is who you are. These are your advantages. These are potential disadvantages. We never say you have these advantages. Mm-hmm. And you say, do you think any of the issues that trouble you come from any of these areas? And I have to say, as long as it's a one-to-one conversation, you won't do an open conversation.
Right.
People will sit down and say, yeah, I have a problem there. What shall I do about that? And so you're really trying to just get them to understand that this wonderful quality they've got has a potential downside if they're not self-aware. And if it's self-awareness the thing.
Right. Okay. Perfect. Because, I coach in addition to athletes, I coach business owners and, $40, $50 million companies, which isn't big. It's a medium size. Yeah. But still, they have this concept of, how I thought, how I behaved got me here. If I just do double, it'll get me there. And it's like, that might not be the case. Yes, what you thought got you here, it doesn't mean it's going to continue to get you there. And for me, it takes months to start to break open that thought idea and start to drip into them, the mental toughness, the concepts of risk and everything else. So I found that just fascinating.
Well, what I find is they will usually engage with us or with one of our partners because they understand there's something not happening the way they want it to happen. And you usually sense it through frustration. know, here I am, I've got these fantastic qualities. Nobody will do what I want them to do. And it's, and you know, I've even had people say, can you go and sort them out? And you come back and you say, well, there's nothing wrong with them, it's you. Right. You know, I've actually been physically thrown out of an office once for saying that. But you know, you can't fudge it. You can't try and solve a problem that doesn't exist.
Right, right. Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Hey, I think part of the call today was to set up a call for an interview, but I think we're already doing the interview.
Yeah.
But was that the case?
Yeah. So, you know, I think...
Because is this being recorded?
No.
It is. Okay. It is being recorded.
Awesome.
On Zoom. Sorry, Doug. Perfect. Do you want to...
No, I saw the recording of...
Doug, we can go straight and do cuts.
I saw the recording here and I thought, man, if I could get a copy of this recording as a preliminary to our follow-up interview, it would be like a really great teaser. So would that be possible to get a copy of the video?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, Greg. No worries. I won't send it off today because, you know, I will be finishing soon. Well, soon. Not so soon, but after our interview, really. After our call. But I will look into this tomorrow. I will keep the file on, basically. Okay. And then, obviously, yeah, as long as Doug has nothing, no objections. And that.
Oh, no, no, God, no.
Greg,
there's one of the things that's happened since we developed our new understanding of mental toughness, or our higher understanding, is we've got a bigger community of people researching it. And there's one guy in particular in Northern Ireland. He's a guy called Costas Papageorgiou.
That's easy for you to say.
Well, he's researching the relationship between mental toughness and the dark triad. Because the dark triad is a big issue for senior leaders. And he is really rocking the boat. Because what he's found is there's a relationship between mental toughness and narcissism. If you're mentally tough and you're a narcissist, you're actually a nice narcissist.
Wow. That sounds like an oxymoron, doesn't it?
Well, what he's saying is people don't understand narcissism. It's another label. So they throw that at people. Mm-hmm. Well, strictly speaking, a narcissist is solely somebody who thinks they're great. So we don't call it narcissism. We stick another label. We say they're confident. What's wrong with that? Do we want confident people at the top of an organization? Definitely. So put the other label back. Do we want narcissists at the top? Now, a nasty narcissist, what they call a subclinical narcissist, and there's only a tiny proportion of them, are people who not only think they're great, but look down on other people. But not a mentally tough narcissist. They don't need to.
Interesting. So what I'm hearing is... If we look at narcissist as a label, as an archetype, then there's the shadow side of all archetypes.
Yeah.
And that shadow side could be positive or negative, but if it's a negative shadow side, it's the I'm better than you, you're worth nothing, you need to look at me all the time, and that's it. Then on the positive side, it's, hey, I know I'm great, and I'm going to allow you to work up to my level, whatever it might be. So it's, you know, when you were describing it to me, if I think it as an archetype and just a label, then there has to be a shadow side to it.
Yeah. So you're absolutely right. So again, you know, we're finding the mantra is self-awareness.
Right.
Okay. So-and-so is a narcissist. They're very confident. Are they self-aware of their impact? Are they so confident that they are switching everybody else off, they're treating people badly? Or are they self-aware and using that to engage with other people? So being a narcissist isn't a sin.
No. It's just like introverts. A lot of people think introverts are shy and they can't be a good leader. That's not the case. It's just whatever this rumor has started 40 years ago that an introvert stands in a corner, doesn't give commands, puts their head down, says yes, yes, yes when they mean no, is totally false.
Yeah, well, if you read Good to Great, in his book, he found that of the 14 highly successful organizations, 13 were led by introverts.
Right, right.
Yes.
Interesting.
And again, that's picking up this faddish. We tend to pick up a popular idea and think it applies to everyone.
Right.
Our world is more complex than that.
Right. When I was in San Jose, I was going to Center for Spiritual Living, and the spiritual leader there said, statistics are for groups, not individuals.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, perfect.
And I thought that was brilliant. And it's just, I don't know why I'd never thought of it, but it made so much sense that, yeah. You know, it's for groups, not for individuals. We can't take a statistic and apply it to an individual.
Yeah, and it's, I know, I have to be very careful here. There's a lot of stuff about gender differences that say men are more than women or women are more than men. On average, that's mm-hmm. true. Individually,
correct.
That's
yeah,
not true.
Right, right. Yeah. Fantastic.
And, you know, sticking labels on people isn't helpful.
Yeah.
Putting people into type boxes that are called type, not helpful.
Right, right. Very good.
So there you are. Hope you enjoyed that little spontaneous conversation, and it has piqued your curiosity to find out more about mental strength and mental toughness. I'll be having an interview with Doug, more formal interview, and be posting that here in the near future. Thanks for listening to the Warrior Mind podcast. If you like what you've heard, please tell your friends and subscribe by your favorite RSS or podcast feed. And remember, every facet, every compartment of your mind is to be programmed by you. And unless you take your rightful responsibility to program your own mind, the world will program it for you.